American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And a good day to you. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Thursday, February 3rd, 2005. And I've only got about two more sleeps until I am going to be tooling off to go to New York City, well, New York State, to go speak at a college down there in the Adirondacks, which should be a good time. And as for me tonight, I'm feeling really, really good. I got a whole bunch of news stories for you, and I broke down, and I took the wife out, and yes, I ate me a whole bunch of meat. And oh boy, did it ever taste good. I had a big, fat, ugly steak, which was probably loaded with mad cow disease, festering in my brain as we speak. So, well, you know, how do you want to live your life? Do you want to live your life in constant fear? Well, I know I shouldn't have probably gone out and had the steak, but you know what? Sometimes you just got to break down, and I don't regret it. I don't regret it. I'll eat it again. But, you know, all things in moderation. Except for some things, which you can avoid. But we'll get into that later. For right now, though, you can read along with me by going to my live journal. Do a search for I Free Slaves is the name of my actual journal, or you can search for it by my name, Sean _ Kennedy, and you'll be able to locate my live journal, which it looks very much like a 14-year-old designed it with all my cool green fonts. One of these days, I'm going to have to, you know, really sit down and learn how to code so I can actually make myself a cool live journal. Believe it or not, I actually wanted to do that with some sort of a, that was the closest thing I could come up with my computer artistic talent, to something that I would consider to be Matrix-y. Now, the thing is, don't laugh, you know, because I'm sure that there's, actually, come to think of it, it's probably significantly less than a 14-year-old. I'd probably put that into the 9-year-old category. But, you know, I mean, it's not stock, and I managed to get a couple of, you know, months paid for, so what the hell? You know, I'm playing around with it. Be patient with me. I don't have much time because I'm too busy learning how to, well, broadcast, do the show. Well, not really learning how to broadcast. That's kind of misnomer. But, you know, getting the show format together. So we're trying to do what we can. Now, if you go to my live journal, you'll know it'll be time to turn the page when you hear me say, "Incoming!" Which is, you know, that's the only thing really left, is we're not actually getting bombed by our own government or by the United States government. I'm broadcasting currently from Canada, and it looks like, as an update, it looks like we may be able to broadcast when we're in New York. Ho-ho-ho. So you'll be getting live coverage, well, sort of semi-live, I mean pre-recorded, but I'll be doing it in New York anyway, so I'll be able to give you guys updates as we go along. Nothing, can't promise anything yet. We got to make sure that we've thieved a laptop from some, you know, donating people, and it's a temporary loan. It's not a permanent laptop thing, unfortunately. But we will be able to broadcast from down in New York, which should be a lot of fun. So getting right into the feedback message. Hello, SKTFM. In my opinion, Norway has been sort of a safe haven when it comes to internet rights. Not so anymore. You brought up the case of Napster.no, which was put down. The company responsible is Tono, www.tono.no, and this victory seems to have given them a lot of momentum. One of Tono's jobs is to take money from radio stations that lets users stream their shows over the net. Ah, but why stop there? After managing to making linking illegal in Norway, they are now demanding money from all internet portholes and independent sites that dare to link to the stream. Tono says that sites like netradio.no and Minekanaler.org, who indexes available Norwegian radio streams, must pay their own licensing fees, even if they're not hosting the streams. By paying the licensing fees, you're allowed to make the stream public on your website. Other sources who want to make the stream public will have to pay their own fee. Resistance is futile. That's from Nyruk in Nyruk. Rok? Nyruk. In Asker, Norway. Now, that's very cool that I got feedback from Norway, from starters. Okay, but this is a guy who's listening in Norway, hears the story, gives us the straight dope, and I'm able to pass the straight dope on to you. That's the power of unregulated independent media right there. Moving into the next little bit of feedback here. Hey, Sean, I thought you'd get a kick out of this.
Ooh.
That's kind of a scary way to start. As of today, I have begun burning your shows to disc and distributing them. I plan on doing this on a daily basis, about one copy per episode per day in as many different locations as I can think of, so as to ensure proper saturation into the public. The limit of one per day ensures that I can afford to keep this up fairly interrupted as well as helps keeps the ones in circulation fairly current. If this works the way I planned, each day someone new will find a disc and listen to that day's newsreel episode. Then they will hopefully proceed to copy and distribute it, thereby making my economical one-disc contribution to multiply with each new recipient, much like a virus. At present, each disc contains that day's newsreel episode in both CDDA and MP3 formats to ensure that anyone can listen to it, along with offline copies of all stories and relevant links, newsreel, site, rant radio, Dark Atlas, etc. This, however, leaves me with a rather large chunk of empty space. Something which always bugs me whenever I burn a CD is just seems wasteful. So right now, the bonus material includes the first episode of Tales from the Afternow in MP3 format, along with the Dave's FSRN episode and links to relevant to both. Problem is, I still have a big old chunk of wasted space, so I'm asking you, do you have any suggestions for good/relevant things I can fill it up with? Things that remain current and are frequently updated are preferable. I'm also looking for more places that will increase the likelihood that they will find intelligent/receptive individuals to listen to them. Currently, I'm thinking mainly bookstores, libraries, schools, and universities. The first episode was placed in a bookstore with a copy of Noam Chomsky's Hegemony or Survival, which I have not yet read. Anyways, I know this ended up being significantly longer than I probably had to be, but thanks, the accidental martyr. Now, that is a prime example of someone who is really going the distance to circulate copies of this show. I think that that's a little extreme. Actually, I shouldn't say that's really extreme, because I mean, Sparky, when Sparky was out there, Sparky was, when we were running Cult, Sparky was leaving discs in doctor's offices, he was dropping it off in computer stores, he was popping it into machines, I mean, he was slipping it into people's cases. There's a million and one ways that you can distribute this, but you got to pick your targets, too, because, I mean, these CDs are expensive. As for the extra space, oh, I don't know, throw your favorite patrolling episode in there, or maybe some of the old What the Hell shows, or... you know, some of the rant speak stuff. I mean, you know, it'd be there's lots of good stuff. Maybe throw some different industrial music in there. Give them a taste of music they've never heard before. You know, throw some Porn on Beta on there. Why not? You know, it's good stuff. Maybe a lot of people have never heard. There's a lot of people out there, incidentally, who've never heard of techno industrial music. They've never heard of it. I mean, of course, they get the little bits of, you know, Crystal Method and stuff like that from movies. But they never get anything that's, you know, really fresh and new that hasn't been, you know, pre-digested and checked by Hollywood. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff you can throw on a disc. I mean, just look for media that's in space, or a space of media that you know that will take up the space you have left, and then throw it on there. Because even if they don't like me and they don't like the show, they may keep the disc around because they like the media you put on there. And then maybe, you know, they loan it to someone because they want to share the media, blah, 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 and the virus spreads. So that's a great way to do it, and a huge props to the Accidental Martyr for doing that. And if anyone out there, you know, we do this program is run purely by donation. If you can't donate, then by all means, please distribute this as freely and far and wide as you can. If you feel bad that, you know, you want to help but you can't afford anything, tell people, tell as many people as you can. Become a rant radio and, you know, newsreel evangelist. Make it happen so that everyone can tie into independent media. And it's not just me. It's not just about me, okay? Far from it. I mean, if they don't like me, that's fine. You know, if you're listening to this for the first time and you think I'm a pinhead, that's okay. You know, God love you. But, you know, make sure you do check with some other independent media sources, because the stuff we're getting on TV is, in a word, shit. So let's try to, you know, make sure that people understand that there are options. There are options out there, okay? We can do this. We can confront the modern core political media machine. On to an opinion here. Also, Sean, this is from Insane Blade. He said, you talk quite a bit about eating meat in moderation. Yes, like tonight. Mind you, I ate like 16 ounces of steak, which isn't really moderation. But, you know, I only do that once every, you know, few months. You know, I kind of break down and have to go out there. Otherwise, I wake up, you know, bloodied in a cow's field and there's all these dead cows everywhere. And I'm like, oh, no, not again. But anyway, what about dairy milk? I'd like to know, what's your take on milk? Thanks, Insane Blade. Now, milk is a scary, scary thing, okay? I have pretty much gone off milk. I don't have dairy anymore. If I do have dairy, I might, you know, be guilty of throwing a little bit in my coffee. But even still, like, having milk on your cereal, I would avoid milk unless it's organic milk. If you can get certified organic milk, pay the $10 for 2 liters that it costs. You know, people go, oh, it's so expensive. Yeah, there's a reason for that. You know, if you're getting organic milk that's health food, like, what you know, you go into the supermarket, right? There's the health food section. Well, then what the hell is everything else in the store? I mean, if there's one section of health food, what's everything else? Is everything else junk food? Is everything else unhealth food? You know, that's kind of a scary thing. So, yeah, if you have to pay the $10 to get the good milk, because that's what you're putting into your body. You can buy the cheap stuff that will poison you and is loaded with hormones and all sorts of, you know, growth products and everything else that they feed these cows, you know. Or you can get, you know, the healthy stuff, which has no chemical additives. You know, whether or not humans should be drinking milk is a completely, you know, different, you know, question. I'm just saying, if you're going to drink milk, I usually have what do I drink? I drink soy, but it's like I can't take straight soy milk. I have like vanilla flavoring in it or something like that. And, you know, it's all California vegan good stuff. So, you know, I throw that on the cereal and I'm good to go in the mornings. But I would recommend highly that you avoid dairy altogether. And if you're going to go with dairy because you like dairy, which is fine. I mean, I dig ice cream and all that, too. Try to get really insist on getting the organic stuff. Otherwise, you could wind up getting yourself in some really, you know, nasty situations a couple years down the road. Now, other people who are thinking of a couple years down the road, incoming the energy lockdown in China. China will face electricity shortages this year as pressure on the country's energy resources continue to outpace production. An official at the National Development of Reform Commission predicts an electricity shortage this year of 25 million kilowatts. He says the country will work on opening up alternative energy channels, including the construction of large coal manufacture bases, speeding up its development of petroleum, natural gas, and water, as well as electricity. Okay, well, if you're going to start using more coal and development of more petroleum, eventually we're going to run out of petroleum faster. The government will also shut down enterprises that consume too much energy. Holy cow. So that would mean then, I'm sorry, you're using too much energy, your company's gone. Wow, that's kind of a scary way to eliminate competition if you're like a couple of big power companies and one guy pays off the government to shut down the other. And if you think that's paranoid, that's exactly how it works. You know, you have two massive corporations. Whoever pays the government more money, they're the ones who survive, and the government shuts down the competition. What a great way for them to make money. You can't tell me that's not brilliant. And in Canada, we're talking about lowering the voting age. Now, this is an interesting piece of data. Right here, lowering the voting age. What a great idea. The thought of, you know, 16-year-olds voting is brilliant. A bill that would lower the voting age to 16 got a boost in the House of Commons on Tuesday. That's what we have here in Canada. We have this crazy House of Commons. 20 MPs from all parties jointly seconded the private members' bill by Ontario Liberal Mark Holland. The maximum number of seconders allowed and some had to be refused, said Holland, who first introduced the bill in November. Currently, only people aged 18 and older may vote in a federal election. Though the new bill would give 16 and 17-year-olds the vote, the minimum age for a candidate would remain 18. Part of the push to lower the age in his attempt to renew flagging interest in electoral process, because young people are like, yeah, like voting changes anything. You know, there's more propaganda against George Bush in this last election than any president in the history of the world. And yet, the guy gets in because the election was fixed. On a website devoted to the cause, proponents say that there's disillusion with the political system. I wonder why that is. Among the 2.6 million Canadians 18 to 24 years old who feel that politicians ignore youth. Well, to get it right, guys, they don't just feel that they ignore youth. They feel they ignore everything and they only pay attention to big business because that's really what it's all about. It's about the cash. You know, and, of course, controlling public opinion to the point of making sure that your sorry ass gets reelected. So they will say whatever they have to say to make sure that their butt keeps in this nice cozy job until, you know, they can get themselves appointed to the Senate where they, you know, they show up once a year and collect, you know, just a disgusting amount of money. That's 12% of the population, by the way, who's the age of 16. On a website devoted to the cause, you know, 12% of the population is slated to be between 16 and 18. So that's a rich source of support for any party that can tap into their psyches and win them over. I like the way they place that there. Can tap into their psyches. Any, you know, if you can brainwash enough kids, you know, you can win them over. Extending the vote to 16 and 17-year-olds would reach them when they're still in school and talking civics classes, proponents say. And like any habit, voting habits established early usually continue for life. Wow, I like how incredibly lab rat this is. You know, I wonder, you know, if I should get involved with politics. What do you think? You think I should give that a try? Do you think I should look at the political thing? Or, you know, because the minute I do, the minute I step up on a podium, you know, my the people who are crying out against me will be citing, you know, all my swearing, don't kill yourself, kill other people. I mean, all that's going to come way out in the open. And I'll be exposed as being a freak and a corrupter of youth. And hell, I mean, they'd probably slap criminal charges on me if I was to try to, you know, swing myself into politics. But the question is, would anyone care? I mean, realistically, I'd get huge press, you know, if I was, well, or they'd ignore me utterly. Those are the two choices. They'd probably ignore me utterly because if they gave me huge press, I mean, a lot of young people would probably listen to my stuff, agree with me, and say, yeah, man, this guy's the shit. Let's vote for him. Which, wouldn't that be an interesting little war to run up here? I wonder what kind of laws I could change in Canada much, hey? A lot of good stuff I could do there. Now, here's a story. You want some good news? How you feeling kind of down? You feeling bummed out? You feeling kind of bad that all the rights are being slowly drifted away and we're gradually drifting into the Homeland Security police state? Well, worry not. I have a bit of promise for you. It's a little bit of vapor, but it's good. How about downloading your consciousness to a full conversion Borg? Yes, we've talked about it lots, but it seems that there's a little bit more science going into this now. When word got around that Hans... Now, I'm going to screw up this guy's name. Hans Moravec. I'm going to try for Moravec. Has founded an honest-to-goodness robotics firm. More than a few eyebrows were raised. Wasn't this the same Carnegie Mellon University scientist who had predicted that we would someday routinely download our minds into robots? And that exponential advantages in computing power would cause the human race to invent itself out of a job as robots supplanted the planet's most adept and adaptive species? Somehow, creating a company seemed uncharacteristically pragmatic. But Moravec doesn't see it that way. He said he didn't start SeaGrid Corporation because it was backing off of his predictions. He founded the company because he was planning to help fulfill them. It was time, he says, slowly rubbing his hands across his bristle short hair. Now, what the hell does that mean? You know, why would you even... Who cares what the guy's haircut is? The computing power is here. The 56-year-old Moravec should know. Born in Katsun, I'm screwing this up because I hate foreign country names, Austria, and raised in Montreal, he has been pushing the envelope on robotics theory and experimentation for the past 35 years. First as a graduate student of Stanford University, he created the Stanford Cart, the first mobile robot capable of seeing and autonomously navigating the world around it, albeit very slowly. And later, as a central force in the Carnegie Mellon's vaunted robotics institute. His iconoclastic theories and inventive work in machine vision have both shocked his colleagues and jump-started research. SeaGrid is the next logical step. So this guy is a heavy hitter in the robotics industry. Okay, he's not just some schmo. This guy knows his shit. Moravec pulls an image up onto one of the two massive monitors that sit side by side on his desk in great unblinking eyes. I'd like to see who wrote this, man. Okay, like, enough imagery here. It's 6 o'clock in the evening, but in an inveterate night owl. He's a night owl. A hooting night owl. A loud hooting night owl. He's just starting his day. I've been drawing these graphs for years, and what will be possible, he comments. His mouse roams along the dots and images and plots to to compare the processing power of old top-of-the-line computers with their biological equivalents. Okay, this guy's pissing me off who wrote this article. Blah, 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 blah. He goes on and on talking about how, you know, everyone's all talking about computing power, but no one's really managing to get a 3D... At Guppy level intelligence, he explained, I thought we could manage 3D mapping and create a robot that could get around pretty well with any special preparation of its environment. But no one was creating that robot. So late in the 1990s, Moravec says he's began to grow very antsy about getting one built. In 1998, he wrote an ambitious grant proposal that outlined software for a robotic vision system. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency quickly funded the proposal. So DARPA, the same people that bring you power armor and the internet, are funding this guy. And 3.5 years and $970,000 later, with PCs just reaching Guppy Smarks, a working demonstration is complete. It proved the principle, Moravec says. We could map with stereo vision if we did it just right. But doing things just right required more than prototype software. Robotic evolution, he adds, has to be driven forward with a lot of trial and error. The only way to get enough is if you have an industry where one company is trying to outdo another. To help this along, he and Pittsburgh physician and entrepreneur Scott Friedman founded Segrid in 2003. Their focus? The unglamorous but potentially huge product handling market. Great. So, what this means is, Buddy here's a visionary. He thinks that he's going to build himself some robots that are going to, you know, one day be able to download our consciousness into them. I call vaporware on that. Thank you very much. However, he does prove a very valid point in that now we're getting robots that can see, and he's focusing on the unglamorous but potentially huge product handling market. Now, what is the product handling market? That's like shipping and receiving, I would imagine. That'd be like processing. That'd be like pretty much what I do at my day job. So, you know, this guy would be building a robot to replace me, which is okay because I hate my job. But when you look at this, I wonder what would happen to all the people who are currently in the product handling market who lose their jobs. You know, what's going to happen to them? I don't think they're super rich because I'm in the product handling market and I am not super rich. I'm excited about this technology. I'm excited that robotics is progressing where we have, you know, stereo vision able to map in 3D and blah, 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 and all the intelligence is beginning to gather. And just the other day we were talking about a $400,000 project for DARPA to teach robots how to read. Do you see where this is going? You know, not to get too alarmist here, not to get all science fiction on you, but that's a little alarming. It's a little concerning. I think we should watch that. Or, rather than be afraid of it, let's embrace that. Let's embrace that. Let's really find out what's going on with that. Rather, because really, you know, now that the internet is being locked down, and we have enough hackers out there that are going to be running around, and, you know, if your interest is computers and technology, but you just can't get into the hacking thing, because that was my problem. I just couldn't. For some reason, I just, you know, I wasn't gifted in that way. I'm sort of a three-dimensional thinker. Not saying that hackers aren't three-dimensional thinkers, but for some reason, I just couldn't get my head into the hacking thing. Now, robotics. Robotics, I believe, is the future. If anyone out there wants to start, you know, playing around with robotics, you know, go pick up, there's lots of sites on robotics. There's, you know, the basic robotics books and UPIC controller cards and all sorts of stuff like that. Go check that stuff out. It's very exciting. And it's really gratifying. I mean, I got one of those Lego Mindstorm set and built myself a little droid that ran around the house. I exhausted it in a matter of an afternoon because I built, like, what I've considered to be the ultimate droid. And I was so close to actually cementing this thing together. I was going to crazy glue and epoxy all the blocks together so that it was, like, totally bomb-proof, because everything I make has to be totally bomb-proof. But it's very, very exciting. And honestly, this is going to be the area where we need to have, you know, free thinkers and people who are independent and giving away software and concepts for free. Because after they, you know, ban all dogs, eventually they're going to start banning robotics and robotics research. It's only a matter of time until a robot gets used in a crime, and then the laws will shift against people learning about robotics. You just wait. They'll be all licensed. Who knows how to use this technology? We must regulate this technology because it's a weapon, and robots can be weapons. And, oh, yeah, I can see that coming. No problem. Now, speaking of weapons and whatnot, the UK residents now have the right to defend their home, which is funny because you're not allowed to own a gun in the UK, so it kind of, you know, you're allowed to beat people to death with frying pans, I guess. Homeowners who confront burglars were told by the government yesterday that they were entitled to kill in self-defense and use guns and knives to protect their family and property. Well, I understand getting a gun in the UK is a little bit dodgy. And furthermore, are you telling me that if just because I wasn't allowed to use a gun or a knife to protect my wife or my children, that there's people out there who wouldn't use a gun or a knife to protect their children, I say screw that. If someone's coming through my front door and I know for a fact, because I'm there and I'm watching, that this guy means my family harm, I'll do time for that. Yeah, you bet. Yes, Your Honor, I cut his head clean off with one fell swoop with my katana. I did this because I knew full well he was going to rape and kill my family. Please send me to jail, but my family remains alive and free, and I will do my time and, feel like a man and giggle myself to sleep at night as I fight off, all the gang rapists. They were reassured that they will not be prosecuted if they acted honestly and instinctively against intruders in the heat of the moment. In advice issued yesterday, the government sought to defuse the controversy over how much force people are entitled to wield in their own homes. The Tories have called for the law to be strengthened to allow the use of all but grossly disproportionate force. That would mean something like, some guy breaks your window, sticks his arm in, and you shoot him with a howitzer. And polls have discovered the public believes the law is tilted in favor of the burglars. Now, that's a very common thought, especially here in Canada. In Canada, guy breaks into your house and falls on the floor and cuts himself on a knife that you left out on like a tablet or something like that. He can sue you. That's how crazy the law is here. Following a brief review of existing legislation, Charles Clark, the Home Secretary, decided that it already gave law-abiding citizens enough powers, but that it needed to be better explained. The result was yesterday's leaflet, which will be distributed to libraries and police stations. It was produced by Crown Prosecution Services and the Association of Chief Police Officers. It told householders, there's a term I haven't heard before, if you own a house, you're a householder. You are not expected to make fine judgments over the level of force you use in the heat of the moment. So long as you only do what you honestly and instinctively believe is necessary in the heat of the moment, that would be the strongest evidence you have that you acted lawfully and in self-defense. Well, in the heat of the moment, if you're totally terrified, your instinct is to kill. Okay? And that's just the truth, man. That's just where it's at. So if you don't think that that's what's going to happen because of this law, well, you're pretty much, pretty sadly mistaken. Now, let's get into this next story here. Incoming! Where do you think AIDS came from? Before we get into this, where do you think AIDS came from? You yourself. Never mind everything I've said in the past. If you've listened to me for a long time, you know where I think AIDS came from. But where do you think AIDS came from? Or comes from? Not how it's transferred. We all know that. Not how it targets, not the susceptible areas. Where did the disease originally come from? Did it come from Africa? Was it that whole monkey thing? Because originally, when that came out, because I remember because I watched it on the news, the story was there was a monkey that bit an airline steward and he flew all over the world and fucked people in, very strategic locations to, breed this, disease. And it traveled all over the world. Okay. Now, that's what the official story was at the time. I don't know what the official story is now, but that's what it was at the time. So where do you think it comes from? Well, it seems that almost half of all African Americans believe that HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, is a man-made virus. More than a quarter believe it was produced by the government laboratory, and one-eighth think it was created to spread by the CIA, according to a study released by the RAND Corporation and the University of Oregon. The RAND Corporation has a long history of being involved with evil. The paper's authors say these views are obstructing efforts to prevent the spread of HIV among African Americans, the racial group most likely to contract the virus. Now, isn't that great? The African Americans are a racial group most likely to contract the virus. The HIV virus is the most tailor-made virus for conservative, uptight Christian psychos I've ever seen in my life. Let me get this straight. You've got a virus that is, if you live a white Christian upper-class lifestyle, you are immune to this virus. You're immune. You can't get it. If you practice abstinence, don't do drugs, marry someone from a good family, have sex with just that person, you're immune. You won't get the disease. But if you check out how the disease is passed, the most sensitive area to get it is within the rectal tract. This disease was tailor-made to clean out ghettos. It affects people with multiple sexual partners. It affects people who are IV drug users. This targets the undesirables in our culture. And so people, is it any wonder why people think that this is a governmentally spread virus for population control? I don't think so. I think it seems almost logical. How can you think it's not? The findings are striking. A wake-up call to the prevention community. Laura Bogart, a behavioral scientist who co-authored the study, told the Washington Post. The prevention community has not addressed conspiracy beliefs in the context of prevention. Now, what the fuck does the conspiracy beliefs have to do with prevention? I think a lot of people involved in prevention may not be from the community where they are trying to prevent HIV. African Americans are 13% of the U.S. population, but account for over 50% of new HIV infections, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. So let me get straight. Like, 13% of the U.S. population accounts for 50% of HIV infections. Wow. That's pretty disproportionate, you know, when you take into account that one in four African Americans are either in jail, in process for going to jail, or are ex-cons and have been in jail. You know, and that's that seems kind of like really high. Like, if that's what's going on there, that's pretty disproportionate. African American women constituted 73% of new female HIV cases in 2003. 73% of all new HIV cases were women, were African American women. Now, what's up with that? How did that happen? Is this just, you know, is this a racial thing, or what's going on there? Like, that's a huge stat. Why is that happening? Why is it so disproportionate that way? You know, is it because it's circulating in communities? A lot of these communities are populated by African Americans because they're low income and blah 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 blah. When you start talking like that, people will call you a racist. But I'm not. I'm trying to figure this out. The last thing I want is anybody to have this dreadful and terrible, crippling disease. I have a friend of mine who I work with who's probably going to die. Well, actually is going to die. You know, he's turned yellow, all his organs are quitting, and he's going to be checking out pretty soon. It's a shame. It's a crying shame, and I wish there's something we could do about it. But it seems to me that, you know, somebody needs to understand where this disease is coming from and why it seems to be just targeting certain social groups. The study, which was supported by the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, also revealed a slight majority believe a cure for AIDS is being withheld from the poor. 44% think that people who take new medicines for HIV are being used as government guinea pigs. And 15% believe AIDS is a form of genocide against black people. Well, I think it's a form of population control. I don't know if I go so far as to say it's genocide against black people. I don't think that it's just genocide against black people. I think they want to take out the gays and the drug users and generally the lower class. So I'd say it's a class war weapon for sure. The responses barely fluctuated according to age, income, gender, or education level. Now, that's a lot of people talking about this. That's a lot of information that's floating around. Where are they getting this from? You know, the study's like, wow, these people are crazy. I can't believe they believe this. Okay, you want to ask yourself why they believe this. You know, no one's talking about, because there's a lot of very educated people who are, you know, jumping up and down screaming, hey guys, you know, we got screwed. The World Health Organization went through Africa and did a series of immunizations, okay? And I can't remember the year that they did this, and I'm sorry, I don't have that off the top of my head. But they went through, and if you look at how AIDS broke out in Africa, it reads like a roadmap for where the World Health Organization went and did these so-called immunizations. It's kind of a scary thing. You know, Africa's a mess right now. A lot of the world is a mess right now. And there's all these diseases that are floating around, like Thailand. A lot of these sort of, you know, tropical paradise regions, everyone's dying. What do you suppose is going to happen when you know, the upper class, you know, white Christian world clears out all these undesirables in these, you know, third world paradise countries? Meaning natural paradise countries. Do you think that they'll build another one of those golden cities like they got built... Anyone know about this thing? There's an island made to look like an Arabic prayer. Okay, I'm not making this up. This island actually exists. I wish I had a link for it. I just thought of it now, but I don't. But apparently, you know, I'm sure people will go, my flying monkeys. They will find this island. But there is an island that if you look at it from the air, it looks like some kind of an Arabic symbol for a prayer. Because, you know, their writing is all very calligraphic. I love Arabic writing, actually. But I should see if I can find the link on that. Because it's amazing stuff. And is that what's going to happen to these countries after they kill off all the indigenous people? I mean, it's not like they didn't do that to the Indians and Native American Indians when they got here. Here, have some blankets, have a whole bunch of disease. Yeah, we'll just wipe you out. No problems. And then we'll just move in and take all your shit. Because that's what we do. Adding to this, poisoned water and addiction. Now, this is one of those news articles that just makes my head hurt because the person who wrote it was really trying to be creative. Serious trouble was brewing for Erica Ferrer. No, it wasn't a tragic accident. It was a drama of another kind. Caffeine withdrawal, which incidentally, people are trying to list caffeine withdrawal as a medical form of sickness, as in a type of depression you can get medication and prescriptions for. I'm not making this up. That's how far the pharmaceutical industry is willing to go to try to make money. Like hundreds of other coffee-dependent residents across Phoenix, she couldn't get her Starbucks fix. Starbucks. Oh, it's nice we got Starbucks in there. Why don't you just go get regular coffee? Early Wednesday, and the city coped with the second day of advisories to boil tap water or use bottled water. Starbucks Corp banned its Phoenix stores from making any Java until the city mandate was lifted and no doubt lost thousands of dollars in sales. Well, they didn't lose any money. They just didn't make money. The city finally lifted a ban around 4 p.m., Oh, what? Something magically happened at 1600 hours that made that, you know, all the water's okay now. But that didn't help for her or other addicts early in that day. Okay, if your only problem is you can't get a coffee in the morning and you're that psycho, I'm desperate, the 35-year-old Ferrer said around 2:30 p.m. I told them, I don't even care about the water. I'll sign the waiver. If this goes on tomorrow, I will be upset. Well, I'm sorry there, little lady, Erica, you know. That's a real crime that you're not getting your coffee. My God, eh? Sign the waiver. Poison yourself. Like, is this how far gone these people are? Are they that fucking nuts? The store manager of a downtown Phoenix Starbucks admitted early Wednesday afternoon that he hadn't yet had a drop of brew and needed a fix. Dude, it's coffee. You know? It's not that big of a deal. Starbucks spokesman Alan Hillowatts in Seattle, where coffee was fit for consumption all day, said that the safety came first and that the city had advised the company to halt production. But at 4 o'clock, production was fine. You know, because all the water magically shifted inside all the pipes. You know, give me a break. Hillowatts didn't seem surprised that customers were riled up. We have very passionate customers. Now, what you have is a lot of junkies. Some caffeine-driven consumers sought alternative sources. I guess I'll switch to Diet Mountain Dew, Jamie Smith had said. You bet. You switch that nice aspartame-ridden toxin. You go right ahead. Turn your brain into sponge. Ironically, one Starbucks advertised a new drink with the tagline, "That's our idea of happy." By Pfizer. That's our idea of happy. Smith, 25, was anything but content. She offered to buy a bottle of water so the Starbucks employees could make her usual sugar-free hazelnut cappuccino. Ah, you see? Now, the problem here is that Smith here, who's 25, has been drinking sugar-free stuff, which means she's been drinking aspartame, and that's why she's insane. I was willing to work with them if they were willing to work with me, but the workers couldn't do it. I'm willing to work with you if you're willing to work with me. Just give me the hit. Just give me the hit, man. I really need it. I will break into fucking cars to get the change in order to buy my coffee. Will you give me a break? And meanwhile, while these people in Phoenix are freaking the fuck out at 2:30 in the afternoon because they don't have a coffee, you know, and they're going off because they're going to be upset if this goes on until tomorrow. Oh, my God. Meanwhile, there's more food stamps than ever being handed out in Texas. The past couple of months have been a lean for, George Herrera, who got laid off from his construction job in November. He'd been looking for work, he said, but hadn't found anything, and he had a family to feed. Raymond Carrizal listened intently from the corner table and waiting room of downtown San Jose Clinic. He'd handed the man a food stamp application and showed him how to fill it out. A family of four can get as much as $499 per month to supplement their grocery budget. Okay, well, that's really not a lot. If anybody needs it, it's him, said Carzil, an outreach worker for the nonprofit Families Under Urban and Social Attack. Families Under Urban and Social Attack, a nonprofit organization. Now, you know, and meanwhile, I just did a story about a woman who's freaking out because she couldn't get a cup of coffee. I bet you if I'd have offered that bitch a cup of coffee for $20, she would have bought it. The Families Under Urban and Social Attack, who has spent the last 3 years getting hungry families signed up for the Lone Star Card, the state's electronic food stamp program. Such outreach efforts, in addition to sluggish economy, a growing population, and relaxed eligibility guidelines, have fueled a 75% increase in the number of Texans on federally funded food stamps since 2000. Now, I draw your attention to how this article is written. You see, such outreach efforts, in addition to a sluggish economy, which is too bad the economy is sluggish. Meanwhile, you know, all the Fortune 500 companies are bringing in massive growth. Unprecedented sales. They're getting profits like no tomorrow. Yet somehow the economy is sluggish. Where's all this money going that everyone's making? You know, there's no one's hurting for cash in the Fortune 500. They're all making a killing. But, no, suddenly, according to this article, well, it's the sluggish economy. No, it's not the sluggish economy. It has to do with the class war. A growing population and relaxed eligibility guidelines. Well, you know, the population will grow because people have families. And somehow relaxed eligibility guidelines relax them. We used to be more stringent and strict on who could get food. But that has fueled the 75% increase in the number of Texans on federally funded food stamps since 2000. 75%, almost double. Yet, despite the jump, fewer people are actually getting food stamps than a decade ago. Statewide, those receiving food stamps peaked at nearly 2.8 million people in 1994, dropped to nearly 1.4 million in 2000, and had begun to rise again, reaching the 2.4 million mark last November. Now, the thing is that's just how many people receiving food stamps. Did they just cut them off? Or is this still going on? This is about food, people. Food. If you have this many people out of work in Texas, there's a lot of guns in Texas. You know? You get rumbling in the stomachs, you'll have rumbling in the streets. Just a little. That's not a threat, man. It's a fact. Okay? You need to look at this. This is a real problem. And it's going to get worse. And the economy is sluggish. I call bullshit on that. The economy isn't sluggish. It's all these bastards are taking the money and running. Now, over across the sea there, it seems that now you're going to be hearing about this in a big-time way. Russian and Iranian satellites are going up. Iran and Russia on Saturday signed an agreement on the design, consultations, testing, and lift of a Zohra satellite. Z-O-H-R-E-H. Satellite. Zohra. Okay, I'm going to call it Zohra, and hopefully I haven't screwed that up. The agreement was signed between chairman of the board directors of Iran telecommunications company Ahmad Mokhtadam, deputy director of Russian Federal Space Agency, oh my God, Roskavaramos? Why don't these guys have names like Frank and Bob? And managing director of Avia Exports of Russia. The satellite will have the capability of telephone communication and fax link, transmission of data and broadcast of radio and television programs throughout the country, and will have 12 transponders. The construction and lift of the satellite is estimated to take 30 months after opening of the letter of credit. The head of the Russian Space Agency officially said the project is a joint cooperation between Iran, Russia, Germany, France, and possibly some other nations in the future. The technology used in non-military satellites is more advanced than many of the current ones under construction, he added. Now, what do you suppose the United States is going to do when they get wind of this? Now, obviously, they know about this. And we're all about owning space. That's why there's an American flag, supposedly, on the moon. I believe, incidentally, that we went to the moon. But, you know, this is where we're going to wind up getting into some real problems where, you know, the satellites will just malfunction. You know, well, the Americans will send up a satellite that's a killer satellite, just wandering around wiping out other countries' satellites. Is that so far gone? Or is that what you expect America to do because that's what they have to do in order to survive and keep the edge? Do you think they're beyond that? I don't think they are. This is something we're going to need to watch because the last thing I want is birds getting knocked out of orbit by pissed off American satellites and crashing into buildings. Well, Sean, you're just being paranoid. Am I? Why don't you tell that to George Bush? He's frozen all the spending in the United States, pretty much, except for the Army. What? President Bush will call a near freeze in the overall growth of government spending not connected now to national defense, and to try to rein in record deficits, a senior administration official said on Tuesday. Well, that's great. You're going to cut everything but the one thing you should be cutting. Bush will make proposal on Wednesday's State of the Union address, previewing the fiscal 2006 budget he will send to Congress next Monday. A senior administration official pointed to Congress's approval last year of a 0.8% cap in non-defense, non-homeland security discretionary spending and said Bush, quote, will articulate a similar type of goal or principle which his budget will adhere to, unquote. With the White House projecting inflation at about 2%, the government program subject to the cap would face a budgetary equivalent of a cut in spending from levels enacted in fiscal 2005. So, essentially, any social programs, anything that's not related to the Army or the military, is going to wind up getting frozen and cut. But why do you need those programs if you got a strong army? If people start uprising because they're hungry, no problem. We'll send in the Marines. Who cares? Whatever. You don't like it? We'll put you in jail and then we'll sell you off to Dell to build computers for slave labor or some other labor camp type option. This is a fantastic idea. The senior administration official left open the possibility the cap would be less than 0.8%, saying Bush, quote, believes we can go even further, end quote, in restraining spending growth. Holy shit. Having pushed through sweeping tax cuts in Bush's first term as president, it's now time to focus on the priority of fiscal discipline, the official added. Okay, how about you start taxing the people with the money, the Fortune 500 companies, so you can look after all the poor bastards on food stamps in your home state? But the proposed cap would affect only about 1/6 of all federal spending, since discretionary spending does not include automatic payments like Social Security and Medicare. Well, that's nice that Social Security and Medicare are going to be out there, but you want to explain to me why 50% of all bankruptcies in the United States are due to medical bills? Or is that just part of the sickness industry? We'll get into that in a little bit. Now, when Sumerian got his car, he got a new car a while back, and he actually turned off, when you buy this new car, because he got it new, like a new car, very jealous, gorgeous car. And he actually turned off the OnStar and all the satellite stuff that was in there. He had it like ripped out of the car, as well as all of the logos that were on the car. They're all gone. He ripped everything off. The guy went completely insane. The people at the dealership thought he was madder than a hatter. But I got to give the guy credit. But that's the willpower of Sumerian. Do not trifle with the willpower of Sumerian. Well, it seems that GM announced the plan on the weekend's NADA conference. In the U.S., believes it would be the first vehicle manufacturer to make both OnStar telematics and electronic chassis stability control features standard across its entire fleet. OnStar will be included on all vehicles in 2007 model year, which stability control will be standard on all GM SUVs, minivans by the end of 2007, and all GM light vehicles by the end of 2010. The emergency medical and public safety leaders of the ComCare Alliance praise GM's decision to make OnStar telematics system standard equipment. The OnStar includes automatic crash notification, wham, police are on the way, alerting emergency services to an accident and pinpointing its location via GPS without requiring the driver of the crash car to do so. So you can be tracked in your car no matter where you are, and you're safe too, because if you crash, oh, no big deal. It'll be okay. Don't worry, little friend. We've got police on the way. And let's not forget that all this information is, of course, being plugged into the Matrix. And, you know, they can track you by your phone, your car. Anybody else have a problem with this? Oh, let's not forget the police. Knock, knock, knock. Police, give us your blood. Some Utah Highway Patrol troopers are becoming medically certified to draw blood from motorists they suspect of driving while intoxicated. Hey, give us your blood. No, kiss my ass. No, you're going to give us your blood. Oh, that's great. Blood tests are necessary because portable breath tests only detect alcohol, not drugs or other possible intoxicants. Holy shit, said Sergeant Lee Perry of the Weber County Office in the Highway Patrol. Without medical certification, troopers must now either take a suspect to a hospital or call in a certified technician to stick a needle in the suspect's arm and take a small sample. Every time a trooper does that, it costs Highway Patrol $50 or $60. Perry said it costs about $25,000 a year to do this. You know, so at a savings of $25,000 a year, we get to forfeit all of our privacy rights when dealing with cops, who can incidentally now search your car with dogs and all that too. Eventually, about 65 troopers will be trained throughout the state in the nominal medical procedures needed to take blood. Yeah, you bet. If he fucks that up or whatever, he takes blood, doesn't clean the needle properly, you get AIDS and die. If he gets air in your artery or in your blood anywhere, you could die. There's about a million things that could go wrong here. And yes, taking blood is not a big deal, but if they don't do it exactly right, they could kill you. A federal Highway Safety Administration grant provided the funds to hire the Utah School of Phlebotomy to teach troopers how to use it. Now, I'd like to see how that class goes. Beth Anderson, the president of the school, said the compressed four-session course certifies the troopers as phlebotomists, legally and medically able to safely take a blood sample. I'd like to see how much that school made from this deal. I'd like to see how much of that is just, you know, a payoff so that they can give these cops the ability to take blood from motorists against their will if they want. You know, you have no say. We're going to take blood. And while we're taking blood, we're going to have the dogs go through your car. Thanks. And, of course, as promised, the sickness industry is killing America. Half of all U.S. bankruptcies are caused by soaring medical bills. And most people sent into debt by illness are middle-class workers with health insurance, researchers said on Wednesday. The study, published in the Journal of Health Affairs, estimated that medical bankruptcies affect about 2 million Americans every year if both debtors and their dependents, including the 700,000 children, are counted. Our study is frightening. Unless you're Bill Gates, you're just one serious illness away from bankruptcy, said Dr. David Himmelstein, an associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, who led the study. So this is a legit study, guys. Most of the medically bankrupt, were average Americans who happened to get sick. Health insurance offers little protection. Okay, this is why I'm so concerned about diet, people. This is why you really need to pay attention to your diet, because if you get sick, you could wind up in the shitter. The research got the permission of bankruptcy judges in California, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Texas to survey 931 people who filed for bankruptcy. About half cited medical causes, which indicated that 1.9 to 2.1 million Americans, filers plus dependents, experienced medical bankruptcy. Now, if that's not a sickness industry, I don't know what is. So we're going to get into the Daily Hack, and this is a good one. This one was sent to me, I believe, by Gijian Machina. I think it was. And if not, it'll be credited on my live journal. I don't have his name written here. But this is programming and metaprogramming the human biocomputer for your daily hack. Now, hear this out. This is some interesting stuff, because I believe the brain, we are merely organic droids. There's some consciousness here. There is some energy at work here. But hear me out. All human beings, all persons who reach adulthood in the world today, are programmed biocomputers. None of us can escape our own nature as programmable entities. Literally, each of us may be our programs, nothing more, nothing less. Despite great varieties of programs available, most of us have a limited set of programs. Some of these are built in simpler forms of life. The programs were mostly built in from genetic codes to fully formed adultly reproduced organisms. The patterns of function, auto-reaction, were determined by necessities of survival, of adaptation to slow environmental changes, and of passing of the code to descendants. Eventually, the cerebral cortex appears as expanding the new high-level computing controlling the structure of lower levels to the nervous system. The lower bulletin programs, for the first time, learning and its faster adaptation to a rapidly changing environment began to appear. Further, as this new cortex expanded over several millions of years, the critical size of the cortex was reached. At this level of structure, a new capability emerged, learning to learn. Now, this site here is by a guy named Owen C. Lilly. Is a graduate from the California Institute of Technology and received his doctorate in medicine from the University of Pennsylvania in 1942. He's worked extensively in various fields of science, including biophysics, neurophysiology, electronics, and neuroanatomy. Dr. Lilly has done many years and research on solitude, isolation, and confinement, and is a qualified psychoanalyst. He spent 12 years working on research on dolphin-human relationships, including communications, and 2 years at Esalen Institute, Big Sur, California, as a group leader, resident, and associate in residence. Recently, he spent 8 months in Arica, Chile, investigating and participating in the Arica training group of Oscar Ichazu, the master of modern esoteric school in the mystic tradition. So this guy's like a hardcore scientist gone mystic talking about brain programming. I think that bears some notice. That's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This is a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of Jesse, Anonymous, Jesse, the Grey Ghost, Robert, Forleet, Michael, Matthew, Matt, Kevin, Derek, Jesse, Derek, Desert Runner, Eric, Speaker, Jeff, Malcolm, Peter, Keith, Timor, WebLife, Richard, Greg, Evan, Matt, Drake, Levi, Ashton, David, Brian, Austin, Tara, Host Mojo, Jonathan, Adam, MST, Mystic, Mark, so many here, Mark, Jonathan, Trevor, Brandon, Art, Dire Mude, Peter, Jesse, Brandon, Justin, Matthew, Dylan, and Lars. Oh, as well as Daniel, another anonymous, and Philip. And if you would like to help keep this Daily News broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on Donate. Some special thanks to some hard net runners who helped me with the stories. Insane Blade, Transix, Sylvanus, Gijin Machina, Ricky Rocket, Wagga War, Anonymous Source, Bobbed Wireless, Digital Baptisms Today are going to be for Mr. Walker, is now known as Molly Wired. And for everyone else who gave me assistance in gathering data, thank you so much. If you have access to information or any of the pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel. That's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at rantradio.com. And if you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album The Day After by Psycho. That's P-Z-Y-C-H-O, bitch. So until tomorrow, that's what server said. End of line.